Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. Two San Franciscans have made a film that's as much a meditation on their hometown as it is an examination of displacement and identity. A young African-American man, Jimmy, wants desperately to keep the family home, this lovely Victorian in the family, because as he will tell anyone who asks and some who don't, his grandfather built it. Titled The Last Black Man in San Francisco, the film's director Joe Talbot and lead actor Jimmy Fails, who also co-wrote the story on which the screenplay is based, they're longtime friends. Their feature-length debut won both Best Director and a special jury award at the Sundance Film Festival this year. It opens tomorrow, June 7th, at the Angelica Film Center and AMC Lowe's in Lincoln Square. Jimmy and Joe are in studio. Welcome to All of It.
Thank you.
How's it feel to have a movie open at the Angelica in Lincoln Center?
It's weird. My ex-girlfriend's name is Angelica, so it's weird. But it's cool. No, it's cool. But yeah.
No, it's surreal. We were the in San Francisco, it's opening at this megaplex, the Metreon, that we both grew up going to. I used to like sneak in movies there, so it's a little surreal. Like see my friend's face now on the marquee.
Yeah, seeing my own face is very weird. I've been seeing it a lot, so
it's better than not.
Yeah.
So as you said, you guys are friends, and the movie centers around these two friends. They're sort of our people we're rooting for, Jimmy and Montgomery. So wait, how did you guys meet? If we're talking friends,
We just grew up in the same neighborhood. It was, you know, we always saw each other. It's a small city, you know, so you see, if you don't know them, then you know of them pretty much. And we always kind of saw each other. It was like a silent acknowledgement, you know. It's like, you know, as younger boys, you don't want to be like, hey, you want to be my friend or something, you know. So just like I see you. And then we ended up, his little brother is closer to my age. Joe's a little bit older than me, but I ended up going to his house because I had met his brother and was playing basketball with his brother. And he was like, hey, come to my house. And then I saw Joe, and then that was kind of the time that we had met, sort of thing. But after already seeing each other around all the time, then we ended up just having like a long talk like throughout the night. And I was in the group home at the time, and I just remember them calling me and being like, what are you doing? Like, you have to get home. It's past curfew. And I was just like, I'm just like talking with my friend. They're like, sure, you're talking to your friend like on a Friday night. Like, sure. But yeah.
That'll
so
really
pretty
work.
Much after that, you know, we just were always just, you know.
Just tight.
I was always over there. Yeah, I was just always. That house is very, again, like, you know, my house means a lot to me, the one that my grandfather owned. But their house is like a very significant place for me as well, like in terms of art.
We made a lot of art there.
We made a lot of art there.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of stuff there.
Joe, when did you first start thinking about making this film?
Well, you know, as Jimmy said, so one of the first things we did was sort of just tell each other stories. So that kind of became our dynamic, almost it feels like, from the first conversation we had on. And we would go through, you know, on these walks through San Francisco. Our area in particular, Bernal Heights, is home to a lot of roller coaster hills, which makes for good walking. So we would talk a lot, and it started off very informally, just sort of these exchanges, and we did make movies going back to when we were teenagers that Jimmy starred in. He's always sort of been in front of the camera and the stuff that me and my brother and our friends would make. And more formally, though, about 5 years ago is when we decided, you know, okay, I think we should try to turn this into a feature. We'd never done anything like that before, though. So the first thing we did was we shot a proof of concept, which was essentially a very funky sort of short film of me hanging out of my brother's car, filming Jimmy as he skates through the city, telling his family story that inspired the film. And we did it in part because I'm a high school dropout. Jimmy had only ever acted in my movies, so we knew, well, who's going to trust us to make a feature film? But we put it online, and we started getting emails from people throughout, actually all over the world, saying, well, these things are happening in our respective cities, happening in London, it's happening in Paris, happening in New York. I think that was the first time we both sort of recognized, oh, this is bigger than San Francisco. But we also got a lot of emails from the Bay and people saying, you know, asking how can we help make this. And so we cobbled together this film family. We ended up calling ourselves Long Shot because it felt like it was going to be a long shot to get this movie made. And we spent years basically doing that, learning how to make a movie together.
So Jimmy, I gave the one line sort of plot, but the script is based on a real family story, your true family story, and you wrote about it in this paper, The Caribbean. Could you tell our listeners a little bit what the story is and what that story was?
Of my, well, the house is you know, my grandfather owned several properties in the Fillmore. He was a preacher and well-known guy in the Fillmore district in San Francisco. So he was always somebody I never got to meet him. He died before I was born, but he was always, you know, there was always a lot of stories, you know, stories about my grandpa, like lifting up a car and, you know, doing all sorts of, I just thought he was like Superman, you know, so I always wanted to be like him or create a legacy like he did. And I have the same name as him too. So, you know, cause I'm fourth. So, that was like, you know, a big, you know, big driving force for me, and that's why I'm so drawn to that house, because, you know, he owned it. I've never owned something of that sort, and I do plan on doing that, you know. And he's just my idol because he came and he started a legacy and he provided for his family, and, you know, so I mean, yeah, really, you know, it starts with my grandpa, really.
And in the movie, Jimmy just wants this house. He just wants that. He needs to have this house be in his life and be in his family's life. We won't give away too much about why that can or can't can't happen. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I think I've seen in some of the reporting about this, people are like, wait, there were black people in San Francisco? Mm. You know, there's that sense that people don't understand that there was wow. that was considered the Harlem of the West.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit people more about the Fillmore.
Mainly try to sweep it under the rug. You know, it's like there's a Moscone Center, but it should be a Charles Sullivan Center. You know, there's a lot of, or, you know, like,
yeah,
you
know,
there's just so much history that goes in, and I wish Danny Glover was here to kind of tell more, because he was there, you know.
He lived through a lot of it. That's why it was such an honor working with him. But I mean, that's, you grow up with this very complicated relationship with San Francisco. People that are from the city know we love San Francisco. We're very proud of our city, but we also have a lot of problems with it.
You have to love it before you can hate it. That's a line in the movie.
I think that, you know, everyone's felt, it's like when someone talks about your mom, you can, you know, say something, no one can talk about your mother. And I think, you know, in San Francisco, you know, going back to, like you said, the Harlem of the West, there were entire blocks of the Fillmore, you know, African Americans living in Victorians that were bulldozed, and those people, like Jimmy said, swept away and never allowed to come back to the city. There's stories of Willie Mays, already a living legend, the Say Hey Kid, arriving to San Francisco with the Giants, and the first house he tried to buy, he was declined at first, you know, and that unfortunately continues to today. There's a story of a woman named Iris Canada, who's 100 years old and was evicted from her house, from her apartment, rather. She'd been living for 5 decades, I believe, at that point, and she died soon afterwards. So, you know, San Francisco, I think Danny said this, you know, a lot of people that live there that we grew up with, you know, feel sometimes like they love San Francisco, but the city doesn't love it back, love them back.
My guests are Joe Talbot and Jimmy Fails. We're talking about their film, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, and it opens June 7th at the Angelica Film Center and AMC Lowe's Lincoln Square. And I encourage people to see it on the big screen, because it is it is pretty.
Oh,
it is a very pretty, sort of surreal at times, movie. Tell me about your cinematographer, your DP, and what you guys were going for.
Well, so we spent, you know, years, it feels like, I mean, unofficially a lifetime sort of worth of, you know, walking around the city and collecting characters and locations. But more officially, the last few years, really wanting to capture a San Francisco that we felt like was disappearing. We would scout a place that we loved. We'd come back a month later to prep, and it'd, you know, be bulldozed. So we felt like we were chasing these ghosts as we were making this film. It was just happening so quickly. Of course, New Yorkers, I mean, I'm sure can relate. And so it was in part, you know, as much about trying to show the beauty of the San Francisco that we loved, a certain side of San Francisco that perhaps doesn't always get the cinematic treatment, you know, that other parts of the city do, but also just trying to archive it. I mean, that's one thing, Jimmy, the word I think you use, Jim, is like wanting to capture it before it's lost.
Yeah, because now it's there forever, and it'll be an educational tool for people that are moving. Biggest thing, the most hurtful thing about gentrification is the insensitivity, and just that you should want to know about a place before you move there. So if you're not trying to become a part of that culture, or at least respect the people that came before you, that's what's the most hurtful. You just want to come and do whatever and act like we don't exist, or act like I'm a stranger when you see me, like it's weird for me to be in some place that I'm from, that you moved to, you know? So, yeah, you know, it's more of a you know, trying to educate them so that there can be, to start a dialogue, you know, like we can coexist. I'm not saying you can't move anywhere if you make enough money, but, you know, you should diseducate yourself on that.
I feel like half of our New York audience is like, yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. Was making the film emotional for you, Jimmy?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, it's very personal and it's very, yeah, I mean, there would be times where, you know, you think, I think I grew a lot making this film, and I got through a lot of things that I didn't necessarily, you know, address in my life that I thought that I kind of just skipped over. You know, it was like I would be filming a scene and, you know, it'd be fine one second, and then I'd be like, oh, okay, we got to cut. I got to go around the corner and get this out and, you know, mm-hmm. cry, whatever, come back, you know. So it was, yeah, it was very emotional.
Joe, let me ask a filmmaking, businessy kind of question. At what point in this process did you realize, okay, wait, this is going to get made?
Oh, man.
I mean, was there like a fairy godfather situation?
Like
was
a week ago. No. I mean, you know, you get so many no's along the way, especially, you know, for us, this being our first time. Mm-hmm. You have these little mini victories, you know, that you sort of celebrate. And that's one of the nice things about having this, like, you know, film family that basically of people we met that came together to work on this independently before it did get financed was like, you have these steps you think that are in towards that direction, but you also, with every little mini victory, you go, well, even if nothing else happens, at least we've gotten this far and we've learned a lot together and we've, you know, we love each other. So I think, you know, that happened often for years as we were building a Get Here. And, you know, you never forget certain things. I never forget when Kalia Neal reached out to us. I didn't even know what a producer did when we started this project, honestly. And Kalia was an East Oakland native. She actually moved to New York, spent some time here working at Focus, and decided she wanted to be an independent producer. She saw this concept trailer that Jimmy and I made, this proof of concept online. Funky as it was, she saw that there was something there she wanted to be a part of, so she reached out to us, and she was like the first real official person. You know, your friends and your family are always going to support you, but she was the first one who sort of felt like she took a risk to join us in this endeavor, and she became like one of my partners in making this movie. And so that's a moment that I'll never forget, meeting her at a cafe and feeling like, oh, maybe there is something here, we're not crazy. And then, you know, meeting Plan B, Christina O, and her bringing us to meet with Dee Dee and Jeremy, who run Plan B.
I know them.
Yes. I mean,
they're great.
Yeah, they are great. And I mean, it takes people like that. This movie, we'd still be trying to get it made if we hadn't met them, you know? And I think one of the remarkable things about them is we had, you know, in the years leading up to this, like I've said, you know, built this sort of collective of people who had been bleeding for this movie and working tirelessly to develop it and get it prepared to take to, you know, a company like Plan B. When they came in, they supported that. They didn't try to change it. They didn't, what happens often is people say, oh, great idea, let's change everything about it. They didn't do that. They said, we get that it's Jimmy's story. We're not going to tell you should cast someone else. Like, we get that this begins and ends with Jimmy. We get that this is about San Francisco. You can't shoot it in Vancouver. We get mm-hmm. that you have this crew of people who, for many of them, it is their first thing, you know? And we're not going to try to bring in other people to replace them who have more experience, because we know these people are going to work tirelessly for this movie. And, you know, for that, I'm eternally grateful.
Jimmy, what's a response that you've gotten that makes you realize we got this right?
Man, probably people have said such nice things, you know, like, God. But mostly just from men walking up to me and some of them feeling even uncomfortable to tell me, but a lot of them just saying thank you for being vulnerable. That's like the biggest, you know. That's the biggest one, because when you put yourself out there, it's hard to do that, and it was hard, you know, and luckily I had good people to rally behind me when it was hard for me to get through putting my story out there and stuff, so it means a lot to hear that from people when they say thank you for being vulnerable. It means, yeah, a lot.
You guys are getting rave reviews. Has it opened up anything else that you can tell me about?
Well, I say yet. Sometimes I see this as potentially a first installment in a trilogy of San Francisco stories about the city.
Cool. Yeah, there's so many stories to be told about San Francisco. So
we got to go on another walk and give up the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you guys go for a walk. My guests have been Joe Talbot and Jimmy Fails. The name of the film is The Last Black Man in San Francisco, opening tomorrow at Angelica Film Center and AMC Lowe's Lincoln Square. Thanks for coming to the studio, you guys.
Thank you so much.
This is all of it on WNYC.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.